South Connection Network. Welcome again to the Ruthless Aggressive Podcast. This is episode number 36. We have the go-home week to No Mercy 2002, so we'll see how they go into this last week before that show. Let me immediately bring in my guest. He's a returning guest. He's been on a few times. You can find him on the Extreme Resurrection, easy for me to say, podcast over on the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed. He's the king of St. Mary's Day. It is Mr. James Gruenberg. What's up, Gruny?
Good evening, Jacob. How are you doing tonight?
I am fine. As long as no, dark secrets from my past get brought up tonight, Gruny, I think I'll be doing okay.
Yeah, me too. I mean, hopefully there's not someone, who's like, you did this back in this time period. I was like, I don't know what I did yesterday.
Yeah, let's hope, because it seems to be a very popular dynamic and a popular thread in WWE in October of 02 is throughout both shows is to come up with these things from people's past and that whole kind of soap opera deal. But so it's been a bit since you've been on the show, not too long, Gruny, but I will say since the last time you're on, the at least on the SmackDown side, So I'll say the two major developments, and I'll get your opinions on it. So the first on Raw, the main one would obviously be Triple H being gifted the title. And then on SmackDown, not so much a story, but it's kind of been the ascension of the SmackDown 6. So I guess I'll ask you about that. Like the SmackDown 6, Gruny, I know you're a bit on the younger side like I was during this era. Were you like at the time into the SmackDown 6? Like was that part of the way you watch? Were you aware of it or did you – just like all these guys that you kind of weren't to the point where, because I know that was sort of an internet thing. So what were you all in on the SmackDown 6 back in October of 02?
I did not know they were calling it the SmackDown 6. I just really liked, I like Chris Benoit. I liked Eddie Guerrero. I like Kurt Angle. And I was a huge fan of the high flying spots by Mysterio. So I had no idea that they were calling them the next group or the next SmackDown 6. And, everyone has their opinion of what the SmackDown 6 is,
Yes. On the Triple H side, were you shooting the pistol at your TV when you got given the world championship or what?
No, because at that time I didn't know what the world heavyweight title actually meant. I was like, oh, Triple H is giving this big gold belt. And it's like, well, why is he just giving it? So I feel like I was kind of like, why is he given the title belt? And what was this gold belt? Cause I remember what it was, back during when Jericho did the Undisputed title thing, and that was the big gold belt. Then they did the switch, and then Brock leaving to go to SmackDown, and then the gold belt being brought back. So him having it handed to him was like, why is it Triple H? You know, why don't they do a battle royal or something?
Yeah, that is an interesting point, Gurney, that if you were somebody who maybe, you know, didn't get into WCW to the later years, it, you know, by that point, the world title in WCW is kind of bounced around. Like, they didn't really, you know, you didn't probably know the prestige going back to like Ric Flair in the 80s and all that sort of stuff. So it does make sense. I kind of get where you're coming from. And I've said it before, it's, you know, before you know where it goes, if you're just thinking like, oh, him getting given the title, it's not the worst like heel storyline, depending on how you go about it. But it's been a little shaky so far because, as I've talked about in the previous shows, like RVD has kind of lost a little bit of his luster since the Triple H feud, and we'll see what's going to happen with Kane as we continue. It's going to be a lot different than what happened with RVD, but I don't know if the result's going to be any different. But
yeah, I did not see it from the shoot side of things. You know, I saw more like the storyline, like, oh, well, this is a really, like, you know, bad guy thing. Triple H is given the world title and he doesn't have to do anything. Oh, well, that's just really, like, bad guy thing, you know? Like, I would boo him, too.
Right. Like, you're, like, same for me at this time. I wasn't really up on the backstage politics and all that. It wasn't until later in my life where I kind of started reading more about the sort of stuff that it came to light.
I think it was when people started, like, you know, opening up and stuff, and it's like, oh, so there is more behind the scenes. But yeah, let's get into the show. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll start with the Raw. So this would be the October 14th, 2002 Raw. We are live from Montreal. As you mentioned too, I usually do the news and notes. There were not really a ton of, you know, nothing, kind of maybe a slow week, I guess. I think it'll be a little heavier once we get out of No Mercy, and when the reaction to the Katie Vick stuff starts rolling in, I'm pretty sure there'll be a lot of news about that. But as far as this week, nothing really stood out as far as, you know, major happenings in the news side. So we'll jump right into the show. So we come out with Kane, and he's approached by a coach as he's walking into the building, who is asking him about the accusations that Triple H laid at him last week. And Kane gets very upset and angry and does not want to speak about it. And so he kind of blows Coach off a little bit. So we see right from the get-go that this is going to be a major thread throughout the show. And with that, we go straight into our first match, which is going to be Kane and the Hurricane, our current tag team champions, who are going to be facing Christian and Chris Jericho, the newly formed team, as Christian has separated himself from the Un-Americans. And the Un-Americans are essentially no more, as I've covered on the last show. But so we come in, and they're really trying to play off throughout this match that Kane is not focused, that Kane's head is somewhere else. He's worried about Triple H's accusations, yada, 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 so that he's distracted. So right from the beginning, Booker T jumps Jericho before the match even really starts to kind of get a few shots in on him, as they kind of have a little bit of a feud simmering right now. But anyway, Hurricane starts us off. He has his normal kind of high energy offense. Always enjoy him. He always puts in some cool stuff. He makes the most of his time when he is in the ring. He's a really awesome role player, and I hope that doesn't come off as like a slight at him, but I mean, he's really good in these. When you just give him a few minutes in a tag match, I think he's awesome. He always pulls out some cool stuff. Kane comes in, really awesome spot here, as Kane has really been looking like a powerhouse lately. He takes Christian and knocks Jericho off the apron with Christian, which I thought was a cool spot to get him over, just to continue to push that he hasn't lost a step since the injury, because he's on a pretty nice roll before that. And again, JR and King debate on commentary whether Kane could be a murderer, and obviously King thinks it's highly possible, and JR thinks it's a ridiculous accusation. So really pushing the whole is Kane a murderer thing, which is really going to come into play later. Christian goes for a belt shot but gets caught, which allows a missile drop kick by Jericho. Kane fights Christian up the ramp, and so as he's fighting him up the ramp, this kind of leaves Hurricane alone, which allows Jericho to reverse a roll up and pick up the win and the tag team championship. So they really try and protect Kane and Hurricane a bit, like I said, by really pushing the that maybe Kane wasn't mentally where he should be, and that's why he made such a lapse in judgment by fighting all the way up the ramp and leaving his partner out to dry. So, I mean, I think that's okay. I mean, the reasoning, we'll get, you know, the storyline behind it, but it, I guess that makes logical sense. It wasn't the greatest match in the world. It was pretty standard stuff, and it was obviously, to me, just a way to get Kane, you know, get the tag title off of Kane as he's going into this title match, because to make it, I guess, more plausible that he would win, because it seems highly unlikely he would win the world championship and have the tag team belts at the same time. But I thought it was a pretty standard, solid tag match, Grooney. I ended up just going 2 stars on it.
I went 2 stars as well. I said that nice run-in by Booker T, stemming from, you know, last week when Jericho beat him up after the cage match at Raw Roulette with the Big Show. And then Chris Jericho was like, oh, who's the sucker now? Who's the sucker now? So I remembered, like, you know, the last week's Raw too. So that's where the stemming feud comes from. And then a good Hurricanrana and Somersault Plancha by Hurricane. I don't know if you would have gotten this, but like, I certainly would not have gotten it back at age 10, but Jerry Lawler was recalling back to 1993 when he got accused right before Survivor Series in 93. Yeah. When JR goes, well, King, have you ever been falsely accused of something? He's like, yes.
Yeah, I was a little shocked that they would bring that up, but I was like, oh, man, yeah. So they're going there.
And then, you know, nice throw into the crossbody dive by Hurricane. So it's like Kane throws a Hurricane onto Christian and Jericho. And then, yeah, good cheat tactic. You know, Jericho had his feet all over the ropes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't mind them as heel champions either for the time being. It's not like the, you know, the tag belts have not been doing a whole lot lately, so it doesn't bother me too much. It's not as if, it's not like Hurricane and Kane were some highly established tag team that, I mean, they've only had the belts for like a week or whatever, so it's not like a huge loss.
Yeah,
I think it was just a thing it was just to push Kane having all Kane's chance of having all the belts as they built up to No Mercy.
Yeah, and it's like Booker T and Goldust seem like the only like established like tag team, where it's like on SmackDown, you know, all these guys are coming together, you know, for a tag team. So, you know, a little like flip floppy with like, oh, who's going to be in a tag team? So there's no real like, I mean, I guess you can count the Un-Americans. So like, that's like the stable of a tag team too. So, but it's not like, you know, they have like incredible names. It's just, oh, Hurricane and Kane, Booker T and Goldust, you know,
where it's right, like just guys getting thrown together.
Like, oh, it's getting called Los Guerreros, you know?
Yeah, right. It is weird that the tag belts are on Raw, but SmackDown seems to be pushing the tag stuff a little more. It's a little, you know, it's a little backwards, but yeah. But yeah, we head backstage after this. Booker T and Goldust want Christian and Jericho. They want to have a shot at them as they are, you know, over the top celebrating with the champagne and everything. And so Eric Bischoff comes and he separates the two teams as Booker T and Goldust are trying to go after them, and sets up a match at No Mercy between these two teams. So kind of putting this into place. As we're going to see, Raw has to try and put some of their stuff into place for No Mercy, because a lot of this is kind of, there's a lot of matches you maybe would assume, but nothing they've really set in stone so far besides Kane and Triple H. So you can definitely see throughout the show them trying to, you know, put a few things in place, and this is one. Of course, we get Jericho saying at the end that he ain't no sucker, because that's really been the main point of their feud, is that Jericho being pissed that Booker T called him a sucker.
Yeah.
So, but with that, we will go to our next match, which is going to be Al Snow versus Lance Storm. After they're really trying to push Al Snow's return and really put over him as a tough enough trainer. I don't know if it's really that effective, but anyway, we got a Regal on commentary during this, I should say. So this is sort of the last vestige of the Un-Americans, as like Storm and Regal are still kind of buddy-buddy at this point, but not really even calling them the Un-Americans. It's just kind of like they just kind of paired off after the team, the stable split. But anyway, Storm hangs out Snow to dry, but Snow catches him on a springboard for a power slam. Regal quickly leaves commentary after JR will not let him live down coming out in the showgirls outfit for Raw Roulette. So Regal just ends up leaving. Snow gives Regal a shot to the outside and hits a crossbody. But as he gets back in, Regal trips him and distracts, which allows Storm to win with the super kick. So pretty much Storm winning on account of Regal's interference, and Al Snow goes down. Not much of a match here. Very quick. It didn't go longer than about 2 or 3 minutes. Not really building to anything. I mean, I guess it puts across that maybe Regal and Storm are going to be sticking around, like kind of being have an alliance despite the Un-Americans going away, but really not a whole lot. Sort of just filler here, Grooney. I went a star and a half. Nothing to write home about.
Oh, yeah, I just went a star. I said nice offense by Snow. The Nux usage backfired, but Lance Storm still gets the super kick. And, you know, like, I know this sounds like it's kind of strange, but I like the, Snow, Al Snow and Lance Storm, you know, their outfits, like, really meant, like, not technical wrestlers, but, like, they were, like, there to, like, wrestle, you know, and, like, they're, like, their pants and whatnot, you know, really say, like, oh, yeah, like, you know, like, we're the real, like, you know, like, we're really trying to, like, you know, put on a show for you guys.
Yeah, it is. They kind of have a similar reputation, right? Like, as the, kind of like not the flashiest guys, but technically sound. I get where you're coming from.
Like, not to be like from Lance Storm, but it's like, you know, they take the sport of wrestling very serious. Like, they do take it serious, you know?
Yeah. Al Snow's a weird guy, though, because it's like, I know you had, like, I guess I see it more with Storm. Like, Storm is kind of known for that, and I kind of get it. But Snow, on the other hand, it's like, he's never, I could never say he's really impressed me too much. I don't know about you, Grooney.
I mean, he's more of like the comedic style too, but you know, he's trying to push that like, oh, I'm the tough enough teacher, and you know, I'm here to like really wrestle, you know, no more head stuff. So it's like, okay.
Yeah, maybe he should bring back head because I don't know. I feel like the crowd was not super into him. Like him being the tough enough coach was not enough to really sell him to the crowd, I think.
Yeah. So.
We'll see where Snow goes from here after his return. Doesn't look like he's doing too much. But anyway, we head back. Coach is speaking with Victoria. And so here we go with the stuff from the past here. As Victoria says that Trish stopped her from getting a chance in WWE and then claims that Trish will do Victoria says that she will do anything to get her spot, unlike Trish, who will do anyone to get her spot. And then Trish comes into frame conveniently and slaps her. So it is weird though, because you know, Gertie, you probably know this too, because I know you know your history of this time period pretty well, but it is, they're almost making it seem like Victoria's making false accusations. But if you're going kayfabe, I mean, Trish, the way she did come in, it was insinuated when she came into WWE in storyline that she was sleeping with Vince. So, you know, maybe Victoria's not totally wrong here if you're just going like pure kayfabe.
Yeah, you know, I mean, she might as well have been sleeping with the boss. I don't know.
Yeah, so. But they're trying to push this as part of the feud, which it's weird because I don't think the feud really needs it. I think they've been doing pretty well building it. Victoria's been.
I thought a nice hard slap by Victoria. And I thought, like, you know, the mincing of the words were very good. It's like, I'll do anything, but Trish will just sleep with anyone to get to the top.
Yeah, it was a nice turn of phrase. My worry is that they're going to end up making the feud too much about that and kind of screw it up the way they did with the Molly feud, rather than just let them have a good feud. Because really, for me, what I've enjoyed about their feud is how physical it is. They've had a lot of good kind of backstage brawls and beatdowns, and they're really getting across that they really hate each other. So I hope they don't get too stupid with it with all this, you know, she's been sleeping to the top or whatever.
Sounds like this is like a high school, like, sounds like a high school Raw. And when we get to the Kane promo, like, well, when Kane gets to tell a story after the match, I'll tell you how I really feel about it, you know. But, like, this seems very high school-esque.
Yeah, like, obviously it was in the back, and, you know, that it was being pushed as a theme throughout the shows that they needed to do more of this type of stuff for whatever reason, that this was going to help them maybe get the ratings to jump back up a bit by creating this kind of soap opera drama stuff with this. Yeah. But I don't know. All right, so we head back and we see RVD, Jeff Hardy, and Spike talk about Bubba's concussion from last week during Raw Roulette with the and that brutal TLC match. And me and Logan talked about that one, and you know, Bubba kind of having to make his way through the match. But by all accounts, I mean, what they're talking about here was pretty. They mention it here, and it's, I think it is the true story. Like, he couldn't even remember. He didn't remember the match. Like, he couldn't remember a lot of pretty basic stuff. So I know Bubba was pretty messed up after that match as far as the concussion goes. Eric Bischoff comes in and smugly claps and says he's proud of all of them for what they did in the TLC match. He shows a highlight reel from the match from last week, pretty extended one, I should say, and tells everyone to leave but RVD. Of course, very heelish, pretty much telling them all to piss off but RVD. And he tells RVD that he is going to have Triple H tonight in a Canadian lumberjack match, which means it will be a lumberjack match and everyone will have leather straps. I'd never heard of this match type before. So a little odd booking, I would say, to have, you know, since RVD and Triple H are just coming off of this feud, we're going into No Mercy, which is all about Triple H and Kane. It is a little bit of weird timing, I think, for this match, but it could be good. We'll see.
So, oh yeah, and don't forget also that he does, Bischoff rewards RVD with a match with Ric Flair.
Oh, correct, yes. So, again, thanks for reminding me, Rooney. Yes, so setting into place another match for No Mercy.
And this is where the problem is with Monday Night Raw. They are just throwing matches together. Mm-hmm. While the feuds are kind of... well, the feuds are fresh. Ric Flair hit RVD at Unforgiven 2002 at Unforgiven. So that's back in September, and here we are at No Mercy, and it's the week before, and you're just like, oh hey RVD, you're gonna fight Ric Flair. It's like, okay, yeah, sure, but. It's like, you know, they built up like, oh, yeah, I can't wait to get my hands on Flair for costing me the world title. But it's like, you had a month. You could have done, like, some sort of, like, promo and, like, you know, going back and forth banter.
Agree. I'm with you. Because going at Unforgiven, it does make sense that he would feud with Flair. But to your point, they haven't really feuded. Like, there hasn't really been a whole lot of interaction between RVD and Flair. Like, you know, at Raw Roulette, RVD was in the TLC match for the tag team title. He didn't give a shit about what Ric Flair was doing. So yeah. I'm with you. It's like they knew that's where they wanted to go, but they didn't bother to do much to build it up or make it, you know, you didn't have RVD cutting promos about Flair screwing him over or anything like that. So yeah. I'm with you. It's not a very good build. It's just kind of thrown out there. But
Go ahead. Bubba was very, very injured, and he's gone on record saying, like, he asked Tommy for his mom, and Tommy had to be like, your mom passed away, like, 4 years ago. He's like, he didn't even remember that, you know? And then Jericho actually went up to Vince and was like, you need to, because Vince was there, like, backstage, and Jericho said, he's like, you need to go back there and you need to thank everybody for what they did, for putting their body on the line. So it was brutal to Bubba. He goes, how do I take a Van Damminator and how do I do my finishing move? So to your point, yeah, Bubba Ray was very out of it too. And I'm surprised that they actually played up like how serious Bubba's injury was the next week, but it was very severe.
Yeah, I think part of it was they're trying to put him over a bit, if I had to think, like, you know, and getting over the, you know, I guess at least showing the highlight reel too, they're at least trying to give all those guys their due for, because honestly too, I mean, that match saved that show. Me and Logan talked about it up to that main event. That was a pretty sorry show, and they came out and all just, you know, destroyed themselves to put on a killer match. So kudos to them. Yep. And, you know, I haven't been the biggest fan of Bubba on this podcast, but, you know, I don't want the poor guy to have CTE or anything. But anyway, Triple H is not happy about this development. He doesn't want to face RVD because he's going into his big match with Kane and doesn't want to get injured in this, you know, brutal sounding match with leather straps and all this. And like you said, Grooney, Flair reveals he's going to face RVD. And again, just kind of an afterthought. They just throw it, oh yeah, he's going to face RVD, no big deal. And Triple H tells Flair he'll take care of him tonight and says that if Kane does not spill the beans about Katie after the next match, he's going to do it for him. So kind of foreshadowing what's to come with the these accusations with Kane. But anyway, we'll go to our next match and That's quite a match on paper. Jeff Hardy versus Rico. So the Rico push was not long because he seems to be, you know, he had this moment of beating Ric Flair, and now he is back to being essentially a jobber. This was real basic. Rico gets a few kicks in, but it's just Jeff Hardy coming back. He hits kind of all his signature stuff, his little corkscrew move off the top rope, and then wins with the Swanton Bomb. It was, you know, very paint by numbers just to put Jeff over. Rico's nothing. I just want a star. Gurney, really not a whole lot to this one.
I went 3/4 of a star, like you said. Nice kicks by Rico. I thought it was a Tilt-A-Whirl moonsault that what Jeff did. I couldn't really tell. And then basically it's just the Swanton Bomb. But correct me if I'm wrong, it might have been like 2 weeks ago, you felt like Jeff Hardy was getting punished. I mean, it's almost like, is this a good thing, or is it still like punishing, like, oh, I'm defeating a guy like Rico, you know? So that's a really good question, you know? It's like, I didn't lose, but did I really gain anything by beating Rico?
Yeah, he has really nothing going on for No Mercy. Yeah, He's really floundering right now. I'm with you. I mean, he gets a win, but it's very forgettable. It's not like they're trying to build him up for a big match or anything. It was just every week they just send him out there to just kind of kill 5 minutes in some match that doesn't really matter. So, yeah, it hasn't been going too well for Jeff, considering where he was in the summer to now. But we'll keep on rolling. So we head to Hurricane backstage. He's trying to calm Kane down, who is livid about all this Triple H stuff. Kane says that he wants to be left alone, so Hurricane leaves him. Terry, who has had a slight romance, I guess you could say, with Kane over the past few weeks, tries to speak to him, and she tells him that whatever it is, he needs to go and get it off his chest in public before Triple H addresses it. And so that will lead us to Kane coming out to the ring, as you mentioned a bit earlier, Gruny. He comes out, and he's very upset. His speech is a little... he's stammering a bit. He obviously is trying to put off that he's nervous. He says he's not a murderer, that Katie was a big fan of his that he knew years ago. The crowd is obviously a very emotionally invested Gurney. As he's given this emotional speech, they all do the what's at every single line he says. So they really seem like they care a lot about this very emotional speech. He says he drove her home. Because she had too much to drink, an animal jumped in front. He swerved, and at the end of the story, Katie ended up getting killed. And he says it was an accident. So Kane is claiming that this is an accident. Any commentary on Kane's part of this story before Triple H comes in and gives in his two cents?
Kane is not a murderer, but has attempted to kill his brother on multiple occasions. I thought we got more of the actual Glenn Jacobs human than we did of Kane the Monster.
Yeah, like his vocal cords are magically healed by now. You know, he doesn't need the voice box thing.
It's like, yeah, he's a monster. It was like we got more of that than the actual like, you know.
Which, you know, is this what we want from Kane, or do we just want him to be like a badass who's, you know, wrecking people?
Good machine.
Yeah, like, do we really want like emotional Kane bringing up, you know, giving an emotional speech? And again, I would say the crowd probably doesn't because they don't seem to buy into it at all because he's also getting what chance?
Like, so I'm just going to say it. I mean, I know Triple H comes out, but like this was how I use it. I said, Kane, this is like it's a very bad high school romance story. Sounds like Kane is the captain of the high school football team. Triple H is the nerd who always wanted to be cool but wasn't. So he's like, well, I'm just going to go get Kane back and I'm going to be more successful than Kane ever was being the high school football captain. That's how I looked at it.
That is funny. But speaking of Triple H, he comes out. He mocks Kane and his Kane being emotional and says he wants the whole truth. He claims that Kane was drinking too, and the doctors found his semen in Katie. He says that Katie didn't love him, and no one could love a burnt up freak. He wants to know, and this is where it really gets dark here, as he wants to know, is the reason that they found the semen because he forced himself on her before or when she was alive or when she was dead. So insinuating that Kane may have had sex with Katie Vick's dead body. Look,
I think this was past my bedtime, so I kind of feel glad I wasn't asking questions the next morning.
Like, look, I like some wrestling goofiness and silliness, but this is like up there with some of the dumbest shit I've ever seen in wrestling. It's so stupid. I don't get the point. Like, is this supposed to make me more invested and want to see the pay-per-view? Like, that Kane possibly, you know, that Triple H is, like, I don't know. Like, what is this supposed to do to make me enjoy this more? Like, because here's the thing. It's not like this is some secondary goofball angle, because we've had a lot of goofy stuff. It's just a lot of, they would at least try and keep it out of the main event and the, you know, the world title. Like, I don't think this needs, if you want to do some stupid crap with, you know, whoever's on the undercard, like some random people on the undercard, that's one thing. But this is like your main title feud, and you want it to be centered around whether or not Kane, you know, doctors finding a semen in some girl. It's just all so stupid. I don't know what your thoughts are, Grooney.
You know, it's like, it's almost like I'm thinking, you know, you're going to like, I feel like you yourself is like, what did I just read? You know, like, are we really writing this? Like, is Russo here? Like, who wrote this?
Yeah, and like, who's this supposed to appeal to? Like, I just don't get...
It's not appealing like, to anybody. I mean, you know...
Yeah, like, is anybody really hanging on the edge of their seat? Like, oh my good, did he kill Kate or not? Like, no, no one cares. The crowd's screaming what when he's talking about it. No one cares.
Yeah, like, this storyline, like, is basically, you know... The Intercontinental Champion may go away if Triple H wins. It's like, well, there's a problem there. Now we got this. So it's like, this storyline is like making more and more no sense.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And they're trying to play it off like it's Triple H playing mind games. And I don't know. It's just dumb. I don't know how else to say. It's just, it's stupid and not in an entertaining way, just in a stupid way. It's just them trying to do... You know, I guess trying to be like scandalous as they've kind of been getting into with the HLA stuff and the Billy and Chuck. And this is just more of them, you know, trying to go in that direction and I guess get eyes back on them and maybe create some kind of controversy.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know if you were going to call your friend and be like, oh, did you hear what Triple H said about Kane? Yeah, like,
it's like, no, we just want Kane. It's a the big red machine badass, and he's facing the big heel Triple H, who's an asshole. Like, you know, we don't need, I don't know, Kane's past. And to what you were mentioning too, Grooney, it's insane given all the history we already have about Kane. Like, how is any of this even possible? But that's probably just thinking too much into it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, we'll keep going. But honestly, it will get... it's going to get much worse. So we head to Molly and Victoria versus Trish and Jackie. Of course, King is going to be horning it up during this one. He's very excited about this match. Trish gets worked over to start. Some good offense for Victoria as she's been having. She has a nice backbreaker. She hits kind of a tope leg drop, which is good. And she's been really awesome in the ring since she debuted. Jackie comes in. She goes at Molly as Molly gets tagged in. And I should mention that Stacey Keibler, for whatever reason, is a special referee here. I think it was obviously just an excuse to have her out here in the short little ref shorts. But anyway, she's going for the Jackie gets a pin and Stacey pretends like she's injured and she can't count the three like she's, you know, her arm gave out on her. She ends up getting bumped, Stacey, and then a normal ref comes in and counts to three as Jackie lands the DDT on Molly. So kind of sucks for Molly, who was kind of positioned as, you know, in the as a had the title just recently, and now she's kind of getting beat by Jackie. But yeah, what a star and a half. The Stacey stuff kind of got in the way. The most important, you know, the main importance of this happens after the match. But any thoughts on the actual match, Grooney?
I said nice hair throw by Jacqueline, you know, like, even though, like, you know, they're, like, Jackie's really just holding on to her career at this point on Raw. Like, for the matches that you do get her, she holds her own, you know. She did that really good hair toss to Molly, and then she does that double head scissors by Jackie to Molly and Victoria. I said bad acting by Stacey, and that was a... That was a really bad botch of pretending to fall, you know? Like, okay, the shoulder thing was was good, but like when she does the actual fall, like it was just bad. And like, you know, and if you recall also, I don't know if you knew it, but Trish beat out Tracy in the Diva of the Year vote. So Trish was taking the lead. So I think Stacy was like, oh, well, I'll just make this so Trish doesn't win this match, you know? So nothing really too serious, you know, like it's very like overlooked. Like, I don't know if anyone actually really cared about the Diva of the Year voting, but you know, that's what it was about. It's almost like Edge and Booker T over the shampoo commercial.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah, I forgot that maybe they might have had a little issue over that. But as I said, the most important thing happens after the match when Trish and Victoria kind of get into a brawl on the outside after the match, and they have to be separated by the refs and the officials, which at least is some pretty awkward moments as these refs are trying to pull them apart. Like King's on commentary saying that they're all trying to cop a feel on these women as they're trying to, you can see the refs trying to get, pull them apart, but they're trying to be careful to not, you know, group these women. So it kind of makes for a kind of awkward situation for them, but just a pull apart brawl between them, which will eventually at some point in the show, I don't know if they said it here at some other point, but we're going to get Trish and Victoria at No Mercy.
Yeah. I gave it a star and a quarter, for the batch wise, you know, for some reason, you know, like I was like interested in what Jacqueline was doing, you know, cause out of like, well, yeah, Molly too, but I was like, you know, Jacqueline and Molly were like the real, like, you know, Trish is still trying to, like, she's good, but like she's still trying to find her own. And it was like Molly and Jacqueline, you know, have like the training and stuff. So, you know, I really liked what Jacqueline was doing.
Yeah, they're both solid. I think Molly's really good in the ring from what I've seen and going through these shows. But I don't know where she's going to go at this point, because it's kind of like if you're not feuding with Trish, you're kind of not doing anything in the women's division in this time period. But we see in the back, we see Booker T and his buddies testing out the straps for the big strap, lumberjack strap match, Canadian strap match, I should say. For later in the night, we get a video package for Batista as he will be making his debut on Raw soon. And then we head to Eric Bischoff, who says that Kane, he says that Kane will still face Triple H, which was kind of funny because, like, why the hell wouldn't he? Like, does Eric Bischoff really care about any of this murder accusations? He's just like, yeah, he's still going to face Triple H. Why wouldn't he? Which was funny. But the crowd boos the IC title being dissolved as he hammers home again that this will be a unification match with the world title and the IC. And then he brings out Pat Patterson because, you know, he is kind of like known, synonymous, I should say, with the IC title, and they are in Montreal. So he gets a huge ovation. He starts speaking to all the fans in French, which Eric Bischoff hates, and tells them to speak English. We then get a very long, really well done IC title tribute video, going through all the different champions and iconic moments and that sort of stuff, which I will say it was a very nice tribute package, but they are putting a lot of extended video packages in this. Which would lead you to believe that trying to fill time.
Yeah. So, like, I do have, like, a couple of questions. How did Batista get to Raw from SmackDown, you know? Like, unless they, you know, agreed upon the trade. Because, you know, it's not like Bischoff and Stephanie did agree that no more jumps were going to happen unless, reviewed by both GMs.
They played it off as these were like Batista and Orton were last minute deals that Eric got in before the deadline. That's how they covered. Okay. That was their cover. That was their cover for that.
Could they not get the rights to Real American tonight? Because Pat Patterson comes out to Mae Young's music. And finally, why are they celebrating Warrior and Hogan from WrestleMania 6 when really the Intercontinental Championship wasn't a big deal at that match?
Yeah,
probably. It was like Warrior winning the World Heavyweight title, and they're like, oh, let's show WrestleMania 6. What happened there?
Yeah, just an excuse to get that, to throw that match in there. But yeah, they show that long tribute package, and then as you would expect at this point, it's at the point where anytime you see any kind of legend come into the ring, you're just expecting 3 minute warning to jump in, and
at
they
least
do
Pat
here.
Was onto it at least, like for the time being, he was like, "No games, I know what you're doing, Bischoff."
And he gets a few punches in too, so which pops the crowd.
I was surprised about that. I was like, who said, if anyone's going to, you know, try and get one over on 3 minute warning, it is definitely Pat Patterson.
Yeah, and so his best buddy, Gerald Briscoe, comes out to the rescue, which
he gets a few shots.
Yeah, he gets a few shots in, but then he starts getting wrecked. His selling cracks me up. He's like flopping all over the place. It's just hilarious with his like bald, poofy hair. And then Big Show comes out to help, which I thought was really random. And he has the strap. And then D'Lo Brown comes and Jeff Hardy. So I was kind of like, what the hell is these three? Why are these three guys coming out? And then they said on commentary that these are all previous victims. So that's kind of how they were.
I didn't even know that Big Show was a victim on 3 minute warning. I was like, so are we supposed to say that Big Show's trying to be a babyface, or is he still a heel? Because see that he comes out with the heel lumberjacks in the main event. So I was confused by Big Show just being there.
Might be one of his turns. Like, he just turned face mid-show, and then by the end of the show, he's heel again.
Yeah,
just
like
added to the list. Yeah. But yeah, but they rationalize it by saying they're all previous victims. And I was like, okay, whatever. Because you really don't remember them being attacked much, because the iconic attacks are all on, you know, legends like Mae and Moolah and, you know, innocent people, not wrestlers. So you kind of don't remember these guys getting attacked because those are not really the memorable attacks.
D'Lo was actually the first one. Him and Sean Stasiak were actually the first victims.
Wow. That would be a good piece of trivia.
Yeah.
Because I guarantee you 99% of people would probably think it would be Moolah and Mae Young. So that would be a hard question on the trivia pod.
Yeah.
Anyway. But anyway, we'll keep going. We see Al Snow speaking with Chris Nowinski, kind of congratulating him for making his way from Tough Enough, because he didn't win, right? Nowinski didn't win. Yeah, so Snow's kind of telling him, you know, even though you didn't win, you found a way, and, you know, congratulations. And Nowinski, being the big douche he is, kind of trolls him and says he doesn't care about being congratulated by somebody who just lost their match earlier in the night. So could we possibly see a trainer feuding with his former trainee? Could be maybe where they're going with this. We will see. But anyway, Chris Nowinski is going to be going against Tommy Dreamer, who he's kind of been feuding with off and on over the past few weeks. They've had a few brawls and whatnot. There's definitely something happening in the crowd during this match. I don't know what was going on, but you could see at the beginning of the match, they were like, all the people in the crowd were looking at something and kind of circling around. I don't know if somebody's getting tossed or what, but anyway.
And just point this out too. Yeah, security was like all over the front row. Like, those fans in Montreal, they were going like nuts. And it was like, this is not your typical Monday Night Raw crowd. Like, this is like a mixture of like Raw and like a little ECW crowd-ish, because like there was like high security guards like all around the front too.
It's wild Canadians, those French Canadians. Anyway, so some back and forth strikes between the two. Dreamer's back goes out when he's trying to hit, I think he's trying to go for a pile driver. His back goes out, and Nowinski turns it into a spine buster. Nowinski goes outside and tries to get the cane, but the kendo stick, Dreamer cuts him off. Snow comes down and grabs it from Dreamer, which is kind of a surprising result, because you would think Snow would try and screw over Nowinski. But this allows Nowinski to win due to the distraction by hitting the full Nelson slam. This was all of 2 minutes. Really nothing great going on here. I went half a star, Gurney. It was there.
Yeah, I went a half a star too. I said Tommy Dreamer is the master of the neck breaker because he just does two neck breakers. Yeah. And then why does Al Snow protect the guy who just dissed him?
Yeah. Very weird. I guess we'll find out next week or something, but I wouldn't be surprised if we never find out. They could forget this in a week and forget they ever did it, and I would not be surprised. Anyway, we'll keep rolling on. Not too much to talk about there. We now see Terry backstage interviewing Triple H, and she wants him to justify his claims. He says that all of it could be backed up via police reports. Terry brings up the timing, saying, is it convenient that he would bring all this up right before their big match of No Mercy? Triple H counters by saying, Kane is a murderer, and so, you know, would he has to call him out for what he is, and he could take someone's life, but he's not going to take Triple H's title, which I thought was a funny line. Triple H says he always overcomes the speaking on the match tonight, the strap match, the lumberjack match. He says that he always overcomes the odds, and then he does like a variation of the Four Horsemen line by saying, whatever, you don't have to like it, but I am that damn good. So definitely pushing the, you know, the flair, him doing the flair cosplay thing going on here. So typical Triple H promo at this point. But anyway.
It sounded like Terry was getting more personal than, like, instead of just being like the interviewer, like she was like trying to like continue that Kane romance. Like, why would you say that? Like, you know, trying to be like Kane's best friend instead of just being like the typical reporter questionnaire.
Yeah, defending her her makeout buddy. So after this, we get a Randy Orton video package. That now, the first one I thought they did like this, it was maybe a little kind of ambiguous as to whether he was supposed to be face or heel. Like, was this supposed to be sincere? Well, this one, you could definitely see they're trying to make it like over the top face to where he's a heel, where it's just all these guys like, you know, Bob Orton Jr. and all these guys like putting him over. At one point, they say he's better than Luthez, which I thought was a great line. Just them really kissing his ass. And now you could see like doing the NFL Films voice and all. And because in the first one, I didn't quite know if this is what they were going for, but now they're kind of really going over the top with it, where they're building him up so much that people are going to have to hate him. And then he comes out, and of course, for whatever reason, JR always interviews Orton, not any other interviewer. Orton tells us that he tore his shoulder, he has a sling. A normal person would take 9 to 12 months, but he's driven, and he will be back in 3 to 4 months. The crowd boos him on that one. And then he puts up on the screen an email with his face up there, which I forget, I didn't write down what the email was, but it was like get well Randy, and, you know, .com or whatever. And he says the fans emailing him will help him recover. And the fans do a very, very loud and raucous na-na-na chant at him, the na-na-na, hey, goodbye. He mentions a screw job in Montreal, but he says that who really got screwed in Montreal is Randy Orton. And unlike Brett, he will be back. And that, of course, gets some huge heat from the crowd. So I'm already loving this dickhead douche, Randy Orton. Yeah. I love unlike Brett, he will be back.
It was great, so like, funny. They're just like not caring at all. They were just like, no, no, no. And it was like, oh my God, poor Randy. But he must have enjoyed that because I thought it was really funny.
Yeah, he definitely has some Rocky Maivia kind of energy going on, where he came in as this, you know, real white meat baby face. And you could tell after he probably got injured and they reassessed it. Like, look, I don't think that's really working. Let's just go the other direction. And you can be this young kind of legacy kid, like that's just, you know, has all these guys putting him over as the greatest ever. And people are bound to hate him. And to his credit, for being such a young guy that's kind of new to this still, I mean, that was a pretty good promo for being live in front of the crowd. I loved his, like, his smugness. He was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it definitely took a page out of The Rock's book. You know, get hurt, come back with a strong heel promo, and you'll be golden.
There we go. All right, we now head to the never-ending feud, it seems now, between Booker T and Big Show. They had the cage match at Raw Roulette, which was not great, and now they're going to be in a Falls Count Anywhere match. So we start off, Booker T lays in some strikes. We head outside, and he dumps Show over the barricade. And from there, we do the walking brawl thing, and they go deep into the building. And we end up in a funny moment. You just see Triple H driving the forklift in the background, which is kind of funny. Just Triple H zooming by on the forklift. But But as they start walking, they're kind of going back and forth, but eventually Booker T is thoroughly getting beat by this point. Big Show's really laying in on him. And they end up in this really narrow hallway. Show misses a kick, and Booker T hits him with a fire extinguisher. They end up in the ladies' room, but then Jericho comes in and cracks Booker T with a chair, which causes him to get the loss in the women's shower as Trish is in a towel. So they had to make sure they snuck, one of the women in there showering to make, to add that in there. Not too much memorable of this. It seemed like most of the match was just kind of walking and hitting each other to make their way to where they needed to go, and didn't really allow them to do too much that was interesting. I want a star and a half just because they beat each other up pretty well, and I guess the ending was all right. But yeah, another not fantastic match. Really nothing great happened. And then also, I guess it builds the heat between Jericho and Booker T, but, not in the most interesting way. I want a star and a half, Gurney.
I went 2 stars, like your standard, typical, like, false count anywhere match, dominance by Big Show early on. Booker T gets smashed hard into the steel wall. Like, that steel wall in the back where, like, Big Show just, like, boom, yes. Slams him, like, smashed hard. And again, it's really just funny. Like, there's Triple H and there's Ric Flair. It's like, come on, champ, come on in. Triple H is just driving this forklift. It's like, what is he doing? I cracked up hard. Going back to what you were saying, that room, like, the camera work was terrible because you, like, they caught Jericho, like, running through, like, the shot, like, to get into. So it was, like, no secret because the cameraman actually ruined the shot. Like, you could actually see Jericho. It was like, oh, I wonder who he's going to attack. Oh, Chris Jericho, what's he doing? It's like, you just saw him. Like, so you know he's there.
Yeah, it was... That's the most interesting match I've ever seen. I mean, like you said, I did enjoy that spot with the wall. Like, you're right, with that metal piece, that was pretty good. But it just seemed like 80% of this was just them walk. Like, it's like they knew they didn't have a lot of time, and they had to make it where they needed to go inside the building. So they had to, like, it was almost like just them walking, trying to make sure they got to the women's locker room in time. It would have been funny if they would have got lost. Like, if they would have took a wrong turn.
Yeah.
But anyway, we now see what Triple H was up to with the forklift, as we see that he has blocked the locker room of the Lumberjacks. Or at first, maybe it's implied that it could be all of them, but then on commentary, they let us know that it's some of them. And so we can kind of figure out that it's probably going to be the ones that would be on RVD's side. Yeah, and of course,
guys, basically.
Yeah, and he punches Coach. And, as usual, Triple H, always the smartest guy in the room, right? But with that will lead us right into our main event, which will be the Canadian Lumberjack match between Triple H and RVD. And like we just said, it will only be heel Lumberjacks here. So as the others are trapped by the forklift. Now, why nobody backstage, like production people or security or anybody, would go and move the forklift, I don't know. But I guess maybe they did, as we'll see later. But anyway, RVD is just getting jumped right from the beginning. He can't get anything. The heel Lumberjacks don't attract Triple H, which I thought was weird because they have kind of played up that just about everybody backstage doesn't like Triple H due to him being gifted the title. So, it's not that crazy. I mean, I get it, they're heels, but it was a little weird given the storyline of everyone hating Triple H. Like, I would think even the heels would probably not like him. But they don't attack him, so it gives Rob an opportunity to dive on them. He does a big dive on all the Lumberjacks, but then he gets thrown back in, and Triple H is working him over, going after the back. And RVD is just taking a complete shit kicking in this match, because if he gets thrown out, he gets beat with the straps, he gets thrown back in, and he gets his back beaten in by Triple H. A desperation roll-up by Rob gets a 2, but he finally starts getting a flurry of kicks in. Triple H tries to put him in the pedigree. Rob reverses it. He goes up for the 5-star, but Jericho crotches him on that. And then finally, at this point, when it seems like RVD has no chance anymore to win this, here comes Booker T and the rest of the faces to a big pop, which I thought this was a pretty cool moment. I thought it kind of paid off, them getting trapped in the locker room, because I think to RVD's credit, him getting his ass beaten so badly kind of built up the excitement for if if and when the faces were going to come out. And so when they finally did, the crowd like really ate it up, and it was a cool moment. He gets a top rope kick. He hits the 5-star. But this is where things got real dumb to me. Because for whatever reason, when the face lumberjacks come out, and so they all start brawling, like the face and heel lumberjacks all start brawling. And like Earl Hebner is just cannot care less about what he doesn't care about what Triple H and RVD are doing. He's like trying to split up the lumberjacks, which is stupid because how in the fuck is he ever going to separate all these guys? Like, it's not going to work. Just Earl Hebner. And like, why does he care? Like, let him fight. Who, like, why does it matter if they're fighting, Earl? Like, worry about the people in the ring, which of course he's distracted by that. So Flair comes in and hits him with the belt, hits RVD with the belt, and then Triple H gets the win. So I thought that finish was stupid. I thought it was a dumbass finish. Like, I don't get why Triple H even has to win right here. Like, they could have just had a thing where the faces come out and it turns into an all-out brawl and they have to throw the match out. I don't really see the need for him to pin. I mean, I know it wasn't a clean win, but just, I don't know. What's the point of him? It's like they went out of their way to make sure he could pin RVD. Like, why? I don't get it. Why does Earl care what the Lumberjacks are doing? It's so fucking stupid. I don't know. Gritty, I don't know what you thought. But just throw out the match, let them brawl, and let it end that way. Just be like, oh, Earl's lost control of the Lumberjacks, and they just, you know, end the show like that. And so I thought the heat was good. I thought Rob got a lot of sympathy, and it was a cool moment when the faces come out. But where they go with it after, I thought was stupid. So I kind of docked the match for it, and I only went 2 stars, Gruning.
Yeah, I would go 2 stars as well. I said that Van Dam gets thrown out first. You know, the straps really must hurt, you know, because, like, they are doing some hard whipping there. Like, basically, the heels are just doing Triple H's dirty work where they don't attack him, but they attack RVD. And the spot of the match was the crossbody on everyone by Rob Van Dam. And then, like I said, yeah, all-out brawl, and then Ric Flair gets RVD with the belt.
Yeah, I just and the thing, so, and then Kane comes out like you expect, which is good, because at first I'm like, because they did say Kane left earlier. I forgot to mention Kane. They say that Kane left because he didn't want to do anything he would regret. And so he comes in at the end and kind of beats up Triple H. Triple H bails, and then all the heels come after him. He kind of cleans house on the heels. So it was cool for him to come in and have a moment and stand strong, but they could have done that either way. Like, they could have had the match end in a DQ, or like him having to throw the match out because it was too chaotic with all the lumberjacks, and still have Kane come in and clear everybody out. I don't know. Like, they've done enough to cool off RVD. Does he really have to get pinned again? Like, it doesn't make Triple H look stronger. It just puts another loss on Rob, which is dumb. But that's how we end the match, with us, Kane standing tall, looking at Triple H on the ramp as we go into their big match at No Mercy, Gruning.
I liked how he chokeslammed 3-minute warning, you know, like Rosie and Small, like in the brute strength of Kane, how he can lift those big guys up.
Yes, it doesn't make you nervous for him, though, because, in, you know, if you're going by typical wrestling logic, usually the guy who stands tall at the end of the go-home is maybe not the guy who wins the match at the pay-per-view. Not always true, but, you know, it's kind of the general rule. But that wraps up Raw, Gruning. What did you think of this episode, and what would you rate out of 10?
I would give it a 4. Like, I mean, you know, like, it seemed like it was all right, but, like, you know, it felt like just a mishmash again, where it's like, we need to just throw these No Mercy matches together. Like, no real build-ups and everything, but, you know, I like the Lumberjack match, you know, like, I like the Falls Count Anywhere. Like, I thought that was all good, but, like, nothing really just caught my eye. So I went 4 out of 10.
Yeah, I'm a bit lower, but for pretty much the same reason. I feel like there was really nothing too good in ring on this show. The Katie Vick stuff is stupid, and that's really a major part of the show. I didn't like the finish to the main event. As far as building to the pay-per-view, I would say we more just got matches announced rather than, like, built for the most part. Like, a lot of them were just kind of penciled in at the last minute, so they had some matches. I feel like the majority of the matches we got on this were kind of just filler and really nothing, not even, like, interesting filler, not even, like, interesting matches that were filler, which I think SmackDown generally does better than them. Like, SmackDown will have filler matches that are at least kind of fun. mm-hmm. like get a little bit of time and are interesting, where these, they just give them like 3 minutes, they go kill 3 minutes, and it's like completely meaningless. So I just feel like there was barely anything of value on this show. Like, I don't feel like they accomplished much as far as good matches or building much for the pay-per-view. The one thing that they built for the pay-per-view was Triple H and Kane, and the stuff they did was pretty stupid. So it's like the one thing they decided to build, it was not good. So 3 out of 10. This is definitely in a tough stretch for Raw, where, you know, I'm trying to remember, it's been at least a few weeks since I think I've given anything on, if I've given an episode of Raw like a 5 or higher. I think maybe for Raw Roulette, I think we might have said a 5, but all in the back of that main event.
Yeah, I was gonna stretch. Mm-hmm. You know, and then you get beat up for going over 3 minutes, you know, by Rosie mm-hmm. and Jamal. You got 3 minutes, good. Well, if you went over 301, so you're getting your butt kicked.
That's a good theory. Maybe that's why all the matches are so short. Everybody's afraid. But with that, we'll see how SmackDown fares in their go home. So this would be the October 17th, 2002 SmackDown live from Toronto. So we're still in Canada. And we start off as we are in the semifinals of the tag tournament. And we'll start off with Farooq. Well, actually, I put Farooq in my notes, but as Cole really hammers home from the beginning of the match, I mean, he must have said at least 7 times, Ron Simmons, like really trying to get across. He even says at one point, we're not calling him Farooq anymore. He's Ron Simmons. So really getting rid of the Farooq thing. He's now Ron Simmons.
Vince in the microphone. Be like, damn it, Michael, don't call him Farooq. He is Ron Simmons.
Like, really, he said it so many times. He's like, Ron Simmons, Ron Simmons. But his partner is D-Von, of course, and they're facing Edge and Ray. So you definitely could kind of see who's most likely going to win this one. Hot open for the faces. Ray and Edge come out like a house of fire going after them until finally Ray loses some steam when he eats a spine buster from Farooq. He gets a desperate drop kick, Ray does, and that allows him to get the hot tag back to Edge after getting worked over for a minute. Simmons actually cuts off a little bit of Edge's flurry, but then Ray comes in to neutralize Simmons. Back in, Ron Simmons reverses the Rana, erases Rana, but Edge comes back with the Executioner. It kind of just breaks down at the end, but Edge ends up in the Executioner and picking up the win. That was a pretty fun sprint tag. I thought the power stuff from Ron Simmons, not Farooq, and D-Von was pretty good. And I really love Edge and Ray as a face team because they both have really awesome kind of face, high energy face stuff. And I like that Edge is maybe a little bit more in the power side compared to Ray. I don't know. They're just a good pairing. But I went 2.25. I thought it was a fun kind of sprint tag to open up the show.
Yeah, I went 2 stars. I said great speed by Mysterio. And that was a really good spine buster by Simmons to, you know, break the heat. I said a great hurricanrana. So it's like Edge launches Rey Mysterio onto the top turnbuckle, and then Rey Mysterio does like that turnbuckle. It kind of goes back to like the it feels like to me it goes back to like the Filthy Animal days when it was like Conan would just throw Rey up there and then Rey would just do the the hurricanrana. And, you know, nice drop kicks by Edge as well, too. So Edge has, like, the speed of the drop kick, even though he's more of, like, not a cruiserweight, but, like, he's definitely, like, above average. Like, you know, like he's up there, Edge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're a good team, just real tight. And I thought D-Von and Simmons played their role pretty well in this one. But after the match, Eddie and Chavo jump Ray and Edge in hopes of getting an advantage, as they believe that they will end up in the finals at No Mercy, even though they have one more match to go. But they kind of jump Edge and Ray, hoping to get a little bit of an advantage and maybe injure them or something. But after that, Funaki interviews Tajiri, who is going to referee the match between Noble and Nydia tonight. Nydia comes in and says she will do what she does in the bedroom. And it's going to be rough like their sex life, says Noble. And Nydia slaps him. So as we're going to see Noble and Nydia go each other. And Tajiri is really funny here because he's just kind of in the back. Like when Nydia is talking, he's like, you know, making all his silly faces. But it does make sense he would be caught in the middle of this because he's sort of been there, I guess, the third wheel of their relationship.
Yeah. I was going to say, who let Tajiri be the ref for this match?
Yeah, he's kind of been buddies with them, I guess.
Oh, yeah, I know. I think they were, like, tag team partners, too. So, It only does make sense. I mean, you know, he probably does a better job than Stacy Keibler does.
Yeah, maybe. Low bar, but we'll see if his arm gives out when he's trying to give the count. But we'll head to the match. So it'll be Noble versus Nydia. Noble says that it's time to get naked and wrestle, which is funny. Tajiri looked absolutely ridiculous because he has this normal, like, those black, like, parachute-looking pants on that are super baggy. But then he just has, like, the standard blue SmackDown ref shirt tucked into it. He looked absurd. Nydia starts off by kicking Noble in the balls. Noble, so through most of this match, through the beginning anyway, Noble's trying to have her end it. He doesn't want to have to fight her. And so she goes and actually hits him with a double leg takedown and tries to pin him there. He continues to beg her to not keep doing this. And so he finally takes her down when she won't listen to him. Taz says that this is foreplay for Noble and Nydia, which was a funny line. I like that Noble is still selling the ball shot later in the match, like he's holding on to his crotch after getting kicked in the dick in the beginning. And then finally he ends up pinning her and getting the win after getting frustrated, her still going through with the match. So as far as the match was, you know, they didn't do a whole lot here, but they're entertaining. I want a star. They're entertaining as characters, which is really what this was all about. And it was fun for all the little mannerisms, like him selling the ball shot, him trying to throw her on his shoulder and just bring her out of there because he didn't want to have to fight her. I thought it was funny stuff.
I went a half a star. I mean, I thought it was good buildup. Well, not like good buildup, but like, you know, the intense low blow by Nydia. And then Nydia actually gets some good offense. And so I think, like, you know, Tough Enough kind of pays off for her being, like, the winner of Tough Enough 1, you know, because, like, you still see, like, she's in, like, her Tough Enough ring gear, too. And I thought that, you know, she had, like, her typical standard drop kicks, you know, and, like, the toe trip and whatnot. But I thought it was a good performance by Nydia and, you know, very good, like, surprise roll-up by Jamie Noble.
So after the match and her rage at losing, Nydia ends up smacking Tajiri. And so Tajiri starts to loom over her as if he might attack her. And so Noble attacks him and beats up Tajiri. And then Noble and Nydia make out and reconcile after their match. So quick turnaround for them. They insinuate on commentary that this is nothing new for him, that just is a typical day in the life of Jamie Noble and Nydia. But it would definitely seem to... like maybe they're setting up a Tajiri and Jamie Noble feud, which I would be here for because those guys are both awesome.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're good cruiserweights. You know, Tajiri's still, you know, holding on to the cruiserweight division along with Kidman and Noble. So they're three good, very good cruiserweights. Now that the Hurricane left and went on to Monday Night Raw.
Yeah, it would definitely wouldn't. You could do worse as far as cruiserweight feuds. But all right, we will go to Cole and Taz, who are actually interviewing Taker via the Titantron. He's backstage. Taker says that he doesn't know Tracy. Actually, no, he goes back on what he said last week, because last week he said he didn't know Tracy. Now he backs that up and says, you know, he does know her, but it was many years ago. He doesn't know her motivation, but this is the last week of his life has been a living hell. But the hell he's been going through will be nothing compared to Sunday. You know, the Tracy stuff is a little goofy, but compared to Katie Vick, I mean, it's really not that bad. It's definitely not as stupid as that.
Yeah, why do they choose the Brothers of Destruction do these drama angles that nobody else better? And it's not even Brock, like, where it's like Triple H is like making all these accusations. Brock doesn't even say a word. It's all Paul Heyman. I mean, you know, good on Paul's end for, like, you know, being the voice of Brock Lesnar and being so dramatic with this.
Yeah, and it's been, I mean, I think they could have got to where they are without it, but all in all, with everything they've done with breaking the hand and all, I think they've created a lot of build. Like, I think they built this well, and we'll see as it goes through the rest of the show. I mean, I think the Tracy stuff is a little goofy, but, you know, again, they could at least play it off like it's Heyman, you know? And it doesn't get to the level of, like, they're just accusing him of cheating on his wife. It's not all this, like, oh, you had sex with a dead body. Like, did you have sex with this girl after she crashed in a car? Like, it's at least more, you know, reasonable soap opera stuff, I guess.
Yes.
But anyway, we head to the Guerreros. They walk in on Chris Benoit in the locker room, who is, does not speak. So this is after what happened last week, where they kind of trick Benoit and beat him up. Eddie says he doesn't like the look. And so this whole thing is just Eddie, like, pleading with Benoit about, like, you know, he needs to believe him that they weren't the ones that jumped him. And he gets really fired up about this. It's like some good Eddie fire here. He's pleading with him. He says that they're familiar, that he would never do that. And Eddie's just losing it as Benoit just stares at him and refuses to look at him. So definitely implying that he maybe does not believe them. And of course, they will meet later in the night as the last semifinal match of the tag tournament will be the Guerreros versus Benoit and Angle. We then head to Tracy, who is with Brock and Heyman. Tracy, of course, is the lady that is accused Taker of infidelity. But Tracy is pissed off about what Taker says and then claims that she slept with him, like, I don't know, 10 days ago or something like that. And so she is, again, saying that Taker has been lying. So the plot thickens with the saga of Tracy and Taker. We then go to our next match, which is going to be Billy Kidman versus John Cena. Cena has kind of been put on the back burner a bit. We haven't seen him too much. He is in the tag tournament, but his kind of little mini push he was getting when he debuted has seemed to cooled off, and he's starting to get into be just another guy. He gets a weird promo, almost like heelish promo at the beginning of this, and blaming Kidman for their loss the previous week in the tag tournament. Kidman gets a little bit of an early edge using his quickness. Cena lands a takedown and catapults Kidman, hammers him with some strikes. He does a delayed vertical suplex, which was pretty impressive. He gets a bow and arrow, and we get some Cena sucks chance. So we might have the first instance of Cena sucks chance, or at least audible one. So historic moment here, Grooney. This might have been the first ever Cena sucks chant.
Yeah, I kind of was surprised, but again, it's like the Canadian crowd, so, you know, they're going to go hard if they don't like someone, and they really were not clearly liking Cena at all, so yeah, they were just, I heard, I was like, they're really chanting, Cena sucks.
Yeah, he cuts the kind of heelish promo, they have the heelish promo, and in this match, he's working, not like a super heel, but he's working heelish, as we see as we go into the finish. So Kidman starts to work his comeback, he hits a flying forearm, he reverses a power, Cena goes for a powerbomb, he reverses that to a sunset flip, which was nice. His sunset flips always look really good. But then Cena ends up stealing the win by using the rope. So again, interesting to see Cena go on heel. I thought a good back and forth match and maybe teasing some possible that Cena too, similar to Orton, maybe going in a more heelish direction, maybe to give him a little bit of juice after maybe floundering a little bit after a hot debut. But I kind of enjoyed this match. I thought they had a good dynamic going with Cena's power. And I think Kidman always plays a really good face, like face in peril. And his he has some good moves to make a nice comeback with. He bumps well. His selling's pretty well. He elicits sympathy well. And I kind of enjoyed this. I went 2.5, Grimmy.
Oh, well, I mean, I went I kind of went a little lower than you did. I went 1.5 stars. I liked it, but like, I mean, you know, Cena's just still like Cena's still green. I like the nice slingshot though to Kidman, like when Cena does the Cena just like flapjacks him like right out of the ring, and then that DDT that Cena does to Kidman. Kidman got nailed hard. Like, it looked like it was like, oh man, like he really hit his head, you know, like right there. And then very heel Cena, you know, like not too heel, but it's like he does heel tactic of putting his feet on the rope. So I liked it, but you know, still green on Cena. And like, you know, I don't know how you felt about it, but like hopefully, like, you know, Cena or like Vince, like maybe this was like, oh, like, you know, like a wake up call for like Cena and Vince to be like, you need to fix your character or you're out of here, you know, like, because the Toronto crowd, yeah, they're in Toronto, like they were very, very they were very loud with the Cena sucks chance.
Yeah, in a couple weeks he'll have his moment that's really gonna, you know, unintentionally I think kind of save him a bit. We'll get there in a couple weeks on SmackDown on a very kind of iconic episode of SmackDown. But
also, Jacob, where did they find Tracy? Because, like, we don't see her again.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I have to look it up. I feel like I've read before where she was from. Like, I don't know if she was a... I don't think she was an adult film star. She might have been, like, a... some kind of model or something like that. I have to look. I forget what her...
It's like, hey, we need tryouts for Undertaker's ex-girlfriend who wants it.
Yeah, I will say I don't think she was a Shakespearean actor or anything. I don't think that was her background, for sure. So she comes in and yells at Stephanie about Taker lying. And Stephanie is just like, rightfully so, like, why would Stephanie care, like, if Taker cheated on his wife? Like, she's like, I don't give a shit. Like, he's a wrestler. Like, all these guys cheat on their wives. Like, what am I supposed to do? But she's just ranting to Stephanie. Stephanie tells her she has a welcome. Heyman says that Brock is a future of SmackDown and that Taker is a maniac. And he really starts going in on the cast that Taker's been using. He doesn't want Taker to be able to have the cast in the Hell in a Cell because he will be able to use it as a weapon, as he's been maiming people with it. He attacked Matt Hardy with it. And so Stephanie says that this is a big decision, that Heyman actually has brought up a good point, but she's going to have to think about it, and she will decide later and share her decision later on in the show. So now Taker retaliates and comes back to Stephanie and starts ranting about Tracy. And again, she Stephanie's like, I don't know. This has nothing to do with me. I don't know. She was annoying me. I don't know what you want me to do. But then he goes to the cast and gives his side of the argument. He says it's stupid that you would consider making him take off the cast. And Stephanie counters and says that Heyman is right. He has used it as an offensive weapon. And Taker, being pissed off, and the as Cole keeps calling the stupid name, an emotional freight train, he smashes the lamp with his cast. And I actually don't mind this as part of the story. I think it's an interesting little caveat to their story. Like, is Taker going to be able to use the cast? Because it's like Stephanie said, he has been using it as a weapon. So it's not like Heyman's completely out of bounds by saying, you know, he makes a decent point. Like, should Taker be able to have it? Because he's been busting people's heads open with it. So, I actually don't mind this. I think it adds a little bit of extra drama to this feud.
Yeah, I mean, I remember this episode, like, when I was young and watched it, like, when it aired, and I was like, oh, is he going to be able to use the cast, you know? And it's a good, it was good dramatic. Like, it's like, Heyman, it's not wrong. I mean, he's using it, and, like, he's making people bleed with it, you know? Like, the cast isn't there to protect Undertaker. He's using it to beat people up, so... No wrong from Heyman. He's got a valid point, like you said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think because it seems valid on both sides, I think it makes sense. And I think they've done a good job building it to where it feels like it's going to be a factor in the match. Like, whether he can have it or not is really going to play a role in the match, which is cool. It's not just going to be, you know, like, I have a feeling they're actually going to go with it when they go into the match, which is cool. But speaking of Brock, we'll head to his match tonight, where he's going to be facing Chuck Palumbo, who is completely out of Billy and Chuck mode at this point. He's pretty much back to Chuck Palumbo. Kind of just, you know, he has interesting hairstyles. He has the dark sides with the blonde top. But
I said we the start same off, thing. Like, he's yeah. like the god of the days of Billy and Chuck. And like, but... he's not the power plant Chuck Palumbo either. Like, I mean, he performs the power plant moves of Chuck Palumbo, but it's not like he's got the long hair of WCW power plant, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually don't
like his natural born thriller looks gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so he's just getting destroyed right from the get-go. Like, Brock's just chucking him around, beating his ass. And I like the spot where Brock, he kind of does where most guys would do the crotch into the, or hit the leg into the post. But he actually pulls, like, his left arm and his left leg and pulls him into the ring post, like, his whole body, and hits his midsection to the post, which I thought was a cool spot. It's not something I've seen done a whole lot. So I thought that was cool. His Chuck's lip gets busted open. So he's really, like, it's just pure destruction in the beginning. Brock goes with the waist lock and starts wearing him down. Chuck finally gets some momentum by throwing He throws Brockett to the post and lands a super kick. And I think Brockett's, they do a really good job as somebody, you know, like Chuck is not, you know, somebody who's super over necessarily, but by having, Brock does such a good job of beating him down, and Chuck does such a good job at selling that when he does sort of make his comeback, the crowd's kind of behind him. Like, you know, they're kind of buying into him because he's been getting his ass beat so much. But Brock really comes back quickly after that, hits the belly to belly, some clotheslines, a backbreaker, and then goes straight into the F5. But yeah, kudos to Chuck for taking a beating because he really got wrecked in this match. And he made Brock look great. And I was like pleasantly surprised by this match. Again, I kind of felt like they did a good job of getting the crowd into it and getting them behind Chuck. It could have just been a squash, but they kind of made it into a little match and kind of built it up. It kind of built pretty well as it went on. So I went 2.5 on this one too. I thought it was a pretty fun match.
Yeah, I want a 1.5 also on this match. I thought it was going to be a squash, but I was really surprised by Chuck Palumbo. You know, Chuck tries to get offense in, but Brock Lesnar is just straight dominance. The nice super kick by Chuck, and like, you know, I don't know if Chuck got busted open the hard way. He might have. And then, you know, the F5 finish. But yeah, pure dominance by Brock, but not a squash match. You know, I was even surprised that Chuck even got that kick in as well.
Yep. All right. But right after the match, Taker comes in. He is on Brock immediately and busts him open with the cast. Heyman helps Brock escape, but they really build the case for I thought this did a good job of building the drama with the cast, because exactly what Heyman was just talking about, Taker comes out, he busts Brock open, but not only that, I think some officials come out and he beats them up with the cast too. So I thought that was a good way to kind of prove Heyman's point a bit too, that not only did he attack Brock, but he actually went over, you know, attacked some innocent people, you could say, with the cast too. So, yeah, I've enjoyed this. This feud has had a pretty good build. It feels like a true, as you know, where we said a lot of the stuff on Raw felt like it was just thrown together, this really feels like a feud because they had the match in Unforgiven, and it's only escalated since then. It keeps building and building to the Hell in a Cell. Like, it feels like they've earned the Hell in a Cell, first of all, and it really feels like a feud, not just like they threw these two guys together.
Oh, no, and it was like a month-long feud, and like, you know, and it's very, like, it's very put together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could really feel the, like, you really get a sense of the hate between these two guys. But, yeah, it's well done. I'm looking forward to the match. I mean, we all know what the match is, but it's been a good build. I've enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. All right, speaking of build, we'll head to the back where we see Tori, who her dad is again here to watch her, or at least she thinks so. So Al is here to watch Tori. He claims that he doesn't want to miss her match, and so she thinks that's very sweet of him. She then awkwardly confronts him about the Dawn stuff, and he warns her. She warns him that Dawn is a predator and to stay away from him. So stay away from her, I should say. She wants Al to avoid Dawn because Dawn's predator. So, we'll see more of Al in a second. Which will lead us to our match, which is going to be a mixed tag match with Dawn and Matt Hardy versus Tori and Rikishi. Taz says that Taz confirms that his people saw Al at the hotel last week. So Al has taken up Dawn Marie's offer and met her at the hotel. We get our first, I think this is the first instance of the Matt facts, you know, since he's been Matt Hardy 1.0, is that, and so his Matt fact for this one is that he's beaten Taker 2 times, which I thought was cool.
Yeah.
We start off and he's constantly trying to avoid, he's constantly tagging to avoid having to face Rikishi, which I thought was some good, you know, fits his character right now. But Rikishi finally, I thought this was weird though, because I guess because Matt keeps tagging out, the ref just allows Rikishi to go after Dawn, because they say in the beginning it's a mixed tag. Like, you can't, you know, whenever the men are in, the men have to tag. And whatever the women are in has to be the women. But then Rikishi throws Dawn Marie into Matt, and the ref doesn't seem to care. So I don't know.
Let's just go with intergender. It's like, but it's mixed. It's like, I'll just go with intergender. Like, I don't care what happens.
Yeah, it's like, you're the faith. It's okay. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
But anyway, Matt, Rikishi nearly, again, like, the ref doesn't care, but Rikishi nearly squashes Dawn with his ass. And again, like, why doesn't he have to tag? I don't know. But Matt finally has to face Rikishi. He hits a neck breaker. He goes for the top rope leg drop. He misses that. He then goes back and tries to hit the twist of fate. Rikishi stops that. Also, Dawn jumps on Rikishi's back, and Kishi slams her into Matt in the corner, which makes them both fall into the stink face position. Matt, for the first one, puts Dawn in the way in a nice heel move. He sticks Dawn's face to Rikishi's ass, so he doesn't have to have it. And then he gets teased as that's after the match. Sorry. Matt helps Dawn reverse so Rikishi and Matt are brawling outside. Tori gets a roll up on Dawn, but Matt goes in and kind of rolls her over and does the little reversal spot where somebody pushes you over. It didn't look that great, but I kind of got what they were going for. But I ended up, and so Dawn gets the win and kind of an upset, I guess you could say. But I thought it was actually a fairly fluid match for what it was. I had some entertaining spots. I like Matt's heel tactics. I thought were pretty fun throughout this. So I actually went 2 stars. I thought it could have been a lot worse, I guess, for me.
I went 1.5 stars. I said that, I don't know if you noticed it, but the kid in the crowd had a sign that said "Ass of Life." I don't know if you got that. I was like, what does that mean? Like, this kid obviously did not write it himself. Like, if I was this kid's parent, like, I am not writing this on a sign. I said a nice throw by Rikishi into Matt Hardy. I thought it was the side effect. I didn't know if it was the net breaker. It looked like the side effect to me. A nice side effect by Hardy to Rikishi. I said very, I don't know if you call it heel, but like very cowardly, like Matt shoves Dawn's face into Rikishi's ass. And then the reversal. So it's like, I guess they kind of are hiding that Dawn's not really a athlete. Because, I don't know if she really did anything. And it's like, oh, well, Matt, just help her reverse it, okay?
Yeah, for sure. They were definitely trying to hide Dawn, just kind of put her in a situation where she's just kind of jumping on Rikishi's back and stuff. Tori isn't much of a wrestler either, but I think she's got more than Dawn Marie. Like, she hits a neck breaker and stuff like that. But maybe better than the match is the post-match where Matt tries to attack Tori, and he ends up kicked in the balls and thrown to the corner. And Tori fakes as if she is going to give him the stink face. And Matt's reaction is priceless, as he's just like, bring it on. Please let me get the stink face from Tori. He closed his eyes in anticipation. And so, of course, she fakes him out. And then he ends up getting Rikishi's ass instead. So, fun moment there. Good. I loved his facials were excellent. When he thinks it's going to be Tori. It was fantastic.
I thought it was really funny.
He was like, bring it on, baby.
Yeah.
I'll take the stink face story. Mm-hmm. Anyway. All right. We then see Brock, who is busted open from Faker's cast shot earlier. He's pissed off, and he actually – I kind of enjoyed this because I liked him. He kind of pushes Heyman off and says – he kind of sends Heyman on a mission to make sure that Stephanie gets the cast taken off, which I like Brock, like, bossing him around. Like, that Heyman is not fully in control, and that Brock is, like, this beast, and, like, if he gets pissed off, Heyman can't control him, and he kind of is pushing Heyman around. That was good. But anyway, Heyman goes to Stephanie and rants about the cast again, but she says she still has not decided on her decision.
That's why Heyman is, like, the best mouthpiece for, like, any star. I mean, we know that Brock can sort of talk, like, kind of with, like, his anger, but it's like if Brock has to cut, like, a long promo, like, leave it to Heyman. But if Brock just needs to say, like, 5 words, like, Paul, I'm fine, you know, like, keep Brock talking short and let Heyman do the long things.
Yeah, right. Yeah, for sure. All right, we then see Angle telling Benoit that he's jealous of the gold medals, but Benoit doesn't really say anything to him. Not much there. We then head to Tori, who asked the assistant. I should mention that there were flowers earlier, and Tori assumes that they're for her. And the assistant in the backstage area explains that the flowers were for Dolan, which of course makes Tori concerned. She's running around looking for Al, and she finds him in the shower with Dawn. And he is, for some reason, fully clothed in the shower. Dawn is nude, but Al Wilson is like wearing a polo shirt in the shower. It killed me that he was fully clothed in the shower.
I feel like Dawn was like, listen, if you want me to do this, he is not to take his shirt off at all.
Sure. I love that idea. She's like, I'm walking out of this building for this man. He better be fully clothed in the shower. Yes. But so now Tori has discovered what is going on. So the plot thickens with the Dawn Marie and Al Wilson story. Left him being fully clothed. Like, where the fuck does he ask? His face too was his face was golden.
I know. I can't wait for these follow-ups. Where the storyline goes with Tori, Dawn, and Al Wilson.
Wow.
So far, it's good.
I love that he's trying to sell it to Tori that he's just coming in. He's like, no, I just have to. I'm flying around the country to watch all your matches.
Tori, it's not what it looks like.
Yeah. Ridiculous. I feel like they kind of implied that she was going vomit too, which I thought was funny. Like, yeah. Tori after she saw it.
And Tori brings up, like, I don't know, like, if like her parents actually were divorced or not. I mean, maybe they did get divorced and it was like perfect timing. Either way, even if they are divorced, it's still a funny, like, you know, storyline setup.
And he's so awkward, like Al, and all these things. Yeah. He's so weird. Like, he has all these weird faces. Like, he talks weird. He's just a very awkward man. Anyway, all right, we head to our main event now, Grooney, which is going to be the last semifinal match to see who will face Edge and Rey at No Mercy. So it's going to be Benoit and Angle versus Eddie and Chavo, who still, they're not calling them Los Guerreros yet. I want to know, it should be coming soon. I'm surprised they haven't called them. They're not calling them that yet. Yeah. Anyway, in a nice bit of retaliation, Edge and Rey jump the Guerreros for what they did earlier, and just for the hell of it, they hit a spear at a 619 on Angle and Benoit. So kind of starts the match off chaotic because before the bell rings, both teams have kind of already are a little bit weakened after the sneak attack. But Angle and Eddie start off with a typical, like, tight, intense offense between them, kind of going back and forth, which is how the beginning of the match goes. Neither team really getting much of an advantage, a lot of quick tags and back and forth action. Chavo actually finally gets the advantage and they isolate Benoit. Chavo laying in the chops, like a Chavo Guerrero flair over here, throwing the chops out, which kind of surprised me. Benoit is trying to power out of this. Chavo cuts him off, but Benoit actually gets a superplex. I love Benoit's struggle here, how he had to keep fighting. And I thought he did a good job putting over that he was fighting to get this hot tag to Kurt, which was really cool. He really built the drama for it. But hot tag Kurt is just amazing. I think it's a spot you don't really get to see much because, you know, Kurt doesn't necessarily do a lot of tag wrestling. And he's usually maybe more in the heel role, I guess, where, you know, he's working over the face. But it was kind of cool to see him get a hot tag because his style is just amazing for hot tag. Because he just comes in and starts, you know, doing the belly to bellies, and he's just like a house of fire, like a cannonball. But he does. I really love this spot though, as they turn the tables again, and it was a cool kind of twist on this normal spot. So Angle does his spot where he runs up to the top rope to do the belly to belly on Eddie, which he typically does on everybody, but it's almost like Eddie has it scouted and kind of pushes him off and hits the frog splash. So I really thought that was a cool spot to kind of reverse one of Angle's key spots. But anyway, Benoit runs in now. He gets the crossface. Ref gets hit in the fray as they're all kind of, things are breaking down now. Eddie locks Kurt in this pretty cool looking leg submission. I don't even know what the hell you would call it.
From El Paso, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know if Taz called it that. Did he?
Mm-hmm. No, I don't think that. They didn't call anything specific, which it surprised me because Taz is usually on the ball with that stuff.
Yeah, I thought it was the lasso from El Paso, and I thought Taz called it, but I don't know.
You're probably right. You probably just kind of burning. But anyway, Kurt reverses that. He goes to the ankle lock. Chavo's trying to sneak a chair, but Benoit steals it. And then You think at this point that maybe Benoit's going to turn on Kurt. He shakes Chavo's hand, but it was all a ruse as he fakes hitting Kurt and just blasts Chavo at Eddie with it. And then Angle recovers, hits the Angle Slam, and picks up the win. So I thought this was a really fun main event. Really awesome high energy stuff. Really smooth, quick tags. Never lost, you know, nothing. Like never lost any pace. You know, never slowed down. Everything made sense. I like Benoit when he's struggling, and I thought it was a cool payoff. Again, I thought it was a nice, like, twist. There were some cool twists in here, like Eddie not getting hit with the belly-to-belly off the top rope, and then, like, they kind of went against the typical, like, the two partners that don't get along, where as Angle and Benoit have had to team more and more, they've actually sort of, rather than them teaming and slowly getting more pissed at each other, they've kind of learned as they've been teaming over the past weeks to just kind of get along, which I think is kind of cool. Like Benoit doesn't turn on them in the end. Like they're going against that whole trope of the partners that don't get along, and they've actually are coexisting, which was cool. But yeah, I went 3.5 on it. I thought it was a really good main event. And the tag tournament was a little weird to start, like kind of random teams, but I think they've ended on a pretty good, like, I think it kind of paid off in the end because it kind of sets up a really awesome match for No Mercy with Angle and Benoit versus Ray and Edge. So, yeah, good match, Grooney. I don't know how you felt about it.
I went 2.5 because, mm-hmm. like, I mean, yeah, it's like what you said, like, great intensity. You know, you really don't, like, take your eye off the ball. Like, nothing really, like, isn't bad. But, like, I felt like, you know, going home, like, the go-home edition, mm-hmm. I felt like it was like the standard, but still very, very good. Like, you know, you're going to get a lot from the Guerreros and Benoit and Angle, but like, I just felt like, you know, nothing really like stood out as like in like the previous weeks, you know, and stuff. So I was just like, all right, yeah, it's still the good standard. Like, you know, you're going to like get great moves and stuff from Benoit and Angle and the Guerreros. And, I guess I want to ask you, like, because like you said, it's a good way to, like, you know, end, like, to get to the end of the finals. I don't know what the original like card looked like, but like, do you think there could have been a better opponent duo for Edge and Mysterio than D-Von and Ron Simmons? Like, I mean, the match wasn't that bad, but like, could you have like subbed them out and like have somebody else, or was it like the right move?
Yeah, I think just by it being a tournament, they kind of, and especially now with the brand split, they don't have a ton of people. So I feel like if that was kind of the issue when they started the tag tournament, is that you're going to have these teams that are sort of just thrown together. So I guess as far as
it's a heel, you know, I mean, you know, so like, I guess like, you know, like there wasn't like, it's not like Simmons was really the baby face like during it. He was like more of a heel with D-Von. So I guess it was all right.
Yeah, and I guess if you go with Kidman and Cena, then you kind of get a face-to-face match, which still could have been fun. It was almost like, I feel like everything leading up to, they were just trying to get to this end. And so they just kind of had some filler teams in there. And this is really the payoff that they were trying to get to, is to have, you know, Ray, Edge. And then even Eddie and Chavo, even though they didn't make it to the final, they still got to be in this match. And I feel like the tournament, too, has kind of established them as a tag team. It's done a pretty good job of getting over Eddie and Chavo as like a cohesive tag team that's maybe going to stick around. So, you know, I was kind of critical of the tag tournament from the beginning, but I think it worked itself out okay. It's hard to argue with the match we know we have coming at No Mercy.
Mm-hmm.
If it gets you that, it's hard to, you know.
Yeah.
Can't be too hard on them. But anyway, so to wrap this up, of course, that is our main event, but it is not the last thing on the show because we need Stephanie's big decision on the cast. She brings out Brock, addresses both sides of the issue that they have brought to her, and she finally decides that Taker can have the cast, which her reasoning behind it, which I guess makes sense, is that it is Hell in a Cell, so even if you use it as a weapon, Hell in a Cell, you can use weapons, so it doesn't matter, like, you know, maybe if it was a regular match, she would have maybe made him take it off, but it's Hell in a Cell anyway, so who cares? It's, you know, you can do whatever you want in Hell in a Cell. And so Brock and Heyman are pissed. Brock actually starts getting in Stephanie's face. He gets kind of creepy, like grabs her hair, which I thought was like, I don't know. That's a weird way to go with Brock's character. I don't think he really needs. I'm always weird when, like, I don't really like when they make Brock creepy. I don't think he really needs that. It's kind of an odd turn for his character. But they do kind of play it off that I guess he was trying to just bait Taker into coming in. And so Taker, of course, comes in, but then eats a spine buster from Brock. Heyman comes in, he slaps Taker, and he says, on Sunday, Taker's going to get hell. And so they kind of, how do I say this? They take their eye off the ball here as Heyman is kind of getting too into it. He's still trash talking Taker as Brock walks up the ramp, and Taker kind of comes back and is playing possum a little bit. And Taker cracks him with the cast and actually busts Heyman open, which I thought this was a really cool thing to end this with as the last thing to build this match, because I think Heyman being busted open really raises the stakes for this. It really makes you feel like, okay, this match is going to be violent. This feud is intense. Like, even Heyman is blading at this point. Like, it really upped the stakes, I felt like. It was a very small thing, I guess, but to me, it really added something to this whole package. But Brock comes in, he drops Taker. Taker drops Brock and continues to beat on Heyman until finally Brock is able to pull Heyman out of there and they're able to escape. But yeah, this was like one of the, like, this last build to it, I was thinking, man, if this pay-per-view was on Sunday and I could pay for it, like, I think this is a match I would pay for. They've done a good job building it. It feels like it's going to be a big, you know, violent war between these two guys in Hell in a Cell. Like, I would shell out the cash for this match.
Yeah, I thought it was a very great segment to end on, and you know, have Undertaker go in, like, you know, strong. So that's how I feel about it. He made Brock Lesnar bleed, you know, in the middle of the night, and you know, he got his hands on Paul Heyman too.
What'd you think of Paul blading?
Ugly, but you know, I guess they had to, like, you know, they wanted something good and they got it.
Yeah, that was good too. All right, but with that, we wrap up SmackDown as we are now all set for No Mercy. So I thought this was a pretty good episode of SmackDown. I thought we had some good build for the title match between Brock and Taker. The main event tag team match, the last semifinal to set up the tag, the final of the tag tournament was good. And even the show moved by pretty quickly. And even the matches that were kind of more filler, I thought were at least kind of interesting. Like, I actually thought the Chuck Palumbo and Brock match was kind of interesting, and Kidman and Cena was pretty entertaining. So I went 6 out of 10 on this one, Grooney. I think this is a pretty good SmackDown, a pretty solid go home.
I went 5.5. So, yeah, like you said, like, some things caught my eye and others didn't. But I will agree that the filler matches, you know, with, like, Dawn Marie and Tori with Rikishi and Matt, that was some good stuff. Yeah, so 5.5 for me.
Yep. All right, so with that, we can go to our awards, Groovy. Now we wrapped up SmackDown. So best match, I'm going to go with that SmackDown tag main event. What do you think?
Yeah, me too. I'm going to go SmackDown main event, Chris, the Angle Benoit versus Guerreros.
Very good. Best moment. I've actually had Heyman blading, like Heyman doing the blade job, I thought was pretty memorable.
Yeah, I thought that, you know, like when, like, Undertaker gets his hands on Heyman, mm-hmm. was a very good moment and good build.
So you're not going to go with Taker revealing that Kane semen was found in Katie Vick.
No.
Either. All right. Best show, I think, based on our ratings, we're probably both going SmackDown better than Raw.
Yes.
Yeah, easily. LVP on this one. I'm going to go with whoever came up with Katie Vick, the Katie Vick storyline. They're the LVP.
You know, I was almost going to go Randy Orton until you brought me back that it's good. He by the Montreal crowd and Randy Orton. So I'm going to go with Stacey Keibler for that horrible acting fall job that she did. She is not a referee, and she was just terrible as the referee.
Yes. MVP, I'm going to go with, this is a tough one. I went with Brock just because I thought he's been good, and he was good throughout all the build, and I liked his match with Palumbo. But I could the tough thing is, like, it could go with someone in a tag match, but it's hard to really pick one guy. So I ended up going with Brock.
I actually went Undertaker.
That's a good one, too.
I could not really, no one really stood out to me, and especially not a Monday Night Raw superstars at all. So, I just think that the build towards the end, where it was like, oh, Undertaker got his hands on Heyman, and he made Heyman and Brock both bleed in one night. And then, Heyman just standing tall. Undertaker standing tall at the end got him the MVP vote from me.
Yeah, it was very close. Taker was very good on this too, I think. I think he's brought it. But with that, we'll go to our, besides your MVP, who did you have as like some standout performers, like your top five, Rudy, if you want to pick five? I know you were on before and you only picked three or something, but it's up
Brock
to you.
Brock Lesnar. You got Brock?
Yes. Yeah, so Brock was my MVP, so.
Okay, yep. I got Eddie Guerrero.
Yes, Eddie.
Kurt Angle.
Yes, Angle.
Chris Benoit.
Yep.
And I'm going to go with Edge this time.
Yeah, I'm pretty much with you. I had Ray on there, and then since I didn't have Taker as my MVP, I had Taker in my top five rather than MVP. But, yeah, it's pretty much everybody in the tag match, and then Taker and Brock, I think, were were really the standouts on these. And, again, I think for neither one of us, we had not a single person from Raw, which is not a good sign.
No, this is a very bad, time frame for Monday Night Raw. So hopefully after, No Mercy, Raw can get on track with things.
Yeah, I agree. Because they have good guys, but like you said, nobody's really standing out. There's good people. They have, Booker T. They have RVD. They have a lot of good. They have a lot of talent, but it's just nobody's really shining,
No.
Except for Triple H.
Yeah.
So Grudy, that kind of wraps us up. Tell us what's going on with the Extreme Resurrection.
Well, me and Michael Cook, we do the monthly recording. So we just got our July episode dropped a couple of weeks ago, and we just got past Unforgiven 2006, where the ECW title's not even on it. It's like Big Show fighting with the McMahons versus DX. Also, King Booker makes an appearance on ECW with the show. So we're just really go driving through September as well on Extreme Resurrection.
Very good. So everybody check that out. You have anything else you'd like to plug, Gurney, besides that pod?
No, not really. Not at the time, no.
Gotcha. Well, thanks for coming on as always. Always good to have you on here, Gruny. But I will be back in 2 weeks, and I will have, it'll be a big show. I have a first time guest that I'm really looking forward to having. We'll be covering No Mercy, which is a really big show. I think a pretty well regarded show. So we'll see how it holds up, and we'll see how it all shakes out, and I'll see you next time. And that's it.